Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to A Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Tesco, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrisons, Ocado, Amazon and specialist food retailers.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Hello, welcome to A Slice of Cheese, the Food FM radio series that celebrates the world of cheese. I'm Jenny Linford, a food writer and cheese enthusiast, the author of Great British Cheeses. Cheese is a delicious and fascinating food, and we're setting out to explore this remarkable food and share the stories of the people who make, sell and love it. Cheese is such a versatile and useful ingredient in cooking, and for this episode I look at how we bake with cheese. I talk to three wonderful cooks and food writers, Dan Leppard, author of many best-selling baking books, including the seminal Short and Sweet, Italian food blogger Stefano Arturi, and Catherine Phipps, whose latest cookbook is Modern Pressure Cooking.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
This week, on A Slice of Cheese, we're looking at cheese as an ingredient in baking. And I can't really think of a better person to talk to me about this than Dan Leppard, a wonderful baker, author of Short and Sweet, which is very much my sort of personal Bible of baking. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jenny.
That's a nice, enthusiastic hello. I like that. Thank you, Dan.
Oh, I'm glad. Anyway, it's a joy to speak to you. So very happy to natter about cheese and baking.
I thought it'd be interesting to look at cheese because it is, you know, it is an ingredient you can use in a number of ways in baking, isn't it? Tell me your thoughts about that, Dan.
I think cheese is unusual because it has almost a kind of MSG quality that it enhances the flavour of other things that are baked or served with it, particularly in the case of, say, cheddar or parmesan or one of those really bright, sharp cheeses. And I think that is useful, if not highly desirable, when you're baking.
I interviewed Sue Lawrence for the last season of the podcast, and she gave this mouthwatering description of cheese scones, Dan, and that was made with really, really generous amounts of cheese. The ratio of cheese to the other things was high. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that cheese can be, as in the sense of sort of baking bread, baking cakes, cheese can be used because it's a fat, I suppose, it can be rubbed into the flour or mixed in with the flour and the butter to be part of the dough. I mean, I just thought that was interesting.
It is. One thing that's curious about cheese compared to butter and other fats is that the fat is bound by protein inside. So often when you're baking with it, the fat doesn't dissipate through the dough. It can, if it's a particularly oily cheese, it can sort of, you can get that oil seeping. But generally, the cheese stays where the cheese is placed, which means you need to often add, as Sue Lawrence said, loads of cheese to get a magnificent cheese scone.
Cheddar seems to be one of those very versatile cheese. I mean, I think what's interesting about cheddar is that, you know, it's lovely cheese to eat, but it's also very good cheese for cooking with, isn't it? I mean, so if I was thinking of a cheese scone, I would think of cheddar would be my first, my sort of go-to cheese, I suppose. Is it the cheese that you enjoy baking with, Dan?
Often. Often. Not always. Yeah. Often. I like cheddar where I expect cheddar. And I think when you're baking too, sometimes you, like when I'm writing recipes, I'll think of the name of the dish or recipe first and then work backwards from that. Curd cheese sounds lovely. Curd cheese tart sounds lovely. Curd cheese scones even. But the reality, say, of a curd cheese scone is a bit grim, you know. So you need to find a kind of like a secondary flavor or a cheating way around that.
Is that because curd is quite a delicate flavor, isn't it, by its nature, curd cheese? I suppose if I was using curd cheese in I would want it in the filling. Actually, when you said that to me, Dan, I had a sudden thought about maids of honor tarts.
Or ricotta in baking. It sounds lovely, and it does affect the texture, and that's a good thing. Well, that's an identifiable thing. And I think when we're thinking of the qualities of cheese in baking, what we really mean is can we identify that cheese has been added to this in some way. That could be flavour, but it could be texture.
Yeah, too. Cream cheese pastry is a thing, isn't it?
It is in my book. I believe it's a thing, though I've been told off about it before. I mean, there's someone saying, oh, gosh, like I have a mince pie short crust made with cream cheese, and I remember someone complaining that that was so far from orthodoxy that it should almost be banned. So with cream cheese pastry, the other thing that it adds is a structure to it. I use it also in the base of a traditional meat pie, because I find that a very simple cream cheese pastry will hold its shape better. And then you can have a flaky pastry top to it, because you want a pie that you can hold in your hand, you can eat without it collapsing and falling apart. A flaky pastry base to a pie, in my experience, tends to do that. And so it's perfect in that way. If you were then to combine the filling with cheese, so say you were going to do chicken cider and cheddar filling to the pie, maybe something a bit more gamey.
Pheasant.
Might be good. Pheasant even. Yes. Yes. I've just come back from Taiwan, and I was eating pheasant there and all sorts bits and bobs.
Amazing.
That can be very exciting too. I was also thinking with ricotta, where it's just very hard to capture the image that a consumer or a home cook will have in their mind about using ricotta and the final flavor. So say you're making a ricotta cheesecake. Sometimes I just find the flavor a bit thin, and I find a combination of cream cheese and ricotta just gives you the body that you kind of think ricotta will have. A New York style Jewish cheesecake is sometimes better with a combination of curd cheese, even a slightly salty sour curd cheese and cream cheese, rather than cream cheese alone. It gives it just a bit more texture.
Yeah. When you start cooking with curd cheese as opposed to cream cheese, and I do think it's harder to get hold of curd cheese in Britain than of cream cheese. But then when you do feel there is sort of, not quite dryness, probably isn't quite the right word, but there definitely is a difference to the texture at the end, isn't there?
I mean, it could be often people sort of bake to eye rather than to temperature. If you were to bake it just until the temperature gets to about, 80, 85, just under almost the starch setting point at 90, you're more likely to get a moister, softer texture than if you kind of overbake it and end up with something horribly dry. I must say, most of the Basque cheesecakes that I taste are terrible. I'm sure there's deliciousness out there, but it's mighty hard to encounter.
Oh, really? That's quite a radical and provocative thing to say, Dan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will die on this hill.
Okay. Well, they taste terrible. What? Because
they're overbaked. They're simply overbaked in order to get the color of it. Yeah. This is always a problem when you're baking to color rather than to, a certain sort of inner quality.
Right.
I guess. We get very hung up about burnt things. I remember one very fashionable restaurant being described by one of our food editors as simply a pile of burnt things on a plate.
Do you think blue cheese brings to the world of baking?
No, I love blue cheese. I particularly like it. Where do I like it best? Oh, I love a blue cheese scone, but I also like blue cheese in shortbreads, small sort of crisp breads, the sort that you might have as an aperitif cookie, if that's is that a category? I want it to be a category.
Yes,
I drink a lot of alcohol,
to be too.
I'd like to think it's a category. I used to work with a chef, Juliet Peston, who explained to me that the point of aperitif food is that it need, or bar food, put it simply, it needs to create thirst. And I think that blue cheeses like Stilton, like Gorgonzola, do stir the throat. There's a sharpness to it that only seems to be consoled by a beautiful spirit, it seems, or lovely wine.
Wonderful. Yes, I mean, I like... Yeah, I mean, at Christmas time, I often sort of serve up little Stilton biscuits and as a nibble, and they're just very, very Moorish. You know, you eat one and then you're eaten 10 quite easily. It happens. It does happen.
Have you ever tried using Stilton in something like a gougère? These are these little Parisian sort of cheese puffs, if you like. But if you anglicise them with Stilton, completely wonderful. Just a joy.
That sounds inspired. I'm going to try that. Yeah, I love cheese straws. I love that whole sort of nibbly side of cheese baking. I think cheese, you know, these flavourful cheese we're talking about, blue cheese, parmesan, they've got strong, punchy flavours. They work a treat, don't they? In that sort of nibble.
I must just talk about the secret cheese ingredient, which is parmesan. Parmesan is often used in combination with other cheeses, again in a kind of MSG way to heighten them.
Mm.
So I know at some of the supermarkets in their cheese twists and things, they'll add in parmesan with into something that's described as a cheddar twist or a Stilton twist. There'll be a sneaky bit of parmesan in there, and it just lifts it. I mean, you've probably noticed it. Sometimes chefs add it to a mac and cheese, a macaroni mm. cheese. It just heightens the cheesiness of the cheese, even if what you are expecting is a kind of craft processed flavor. Having some really punchy parmesan in there just lifts it.
That's clever. What about cheese and bread? Because yes, tell us about that, Dan. You know so much about breads. What are nice ways to sort of incorporate cheese into bread making?
Oh, just as chunks. I mean, chunks of yeah, huge, and the bigger the better, if you can. Huge mm. chunks. I think in bread rolls is particularly good. In a loaf. It's a lovely idea, and it sells incredibly well, these loaves of sort of chunky, say, chunky cheddar and chive, farmhouse cob, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It sells really well, but when you actually come to use it as a customer, you have these slices where when you toast them, the cheese melts out and everything. So I think in something smaller that you can kind of eat on the day, sort of like mini loaves. In those, you know, those mini tin loaves?
Yeah.
That you see? I love those. So do those with some big chunks of cheddar. You could do rosemary and gorgonzola. One tip about the softer cheeses like gorgonzola.
Yeah.
Don't add the cheese at the beginning. Wait until the dough has had its first rise, if you like. Spread the dough out quite thinly, as if you're making a puff pastry, so about a centimetre thin on a worktop. It can be floured or a little bit of water underneath. Then press small pieces of gorgonzola into it. Roll it up one way, like a Swiss roll. Press down on top of it, and then roll it up from left to right, the other, so mm. that the cheese is incorporated in it, but without falling apart.
That's a really good tip. That's so interesting, Dan. As you were describing that, I just thought, I know you do a lot of teaching, Dan. I could just hear, I was like, yep, this is a teacher speaking. Someone who's used to hearing their cooking knowledge, you know, and explaining it really, really clearly. Because I know you do bread making classes, don't you, with cookery school? And
Yes, with the yeah. cookery school. With nearly 20 years, I think it's about 19 years.
Well, I've met people who've done your class, and they've all said how wonderful it was and how much they learned.
That's wonderful. I mean, I feel very pleased that even many of the teachers and top bakers out there have done the class, and I like to think it played a part in them getting to where they are today.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. I think the capacity to share knowledge is from people who know and who are really generous. I love that. I love people who share what they know generously. Mm. It's a very appealing quality, I think. I was also thinking, to get back to cheese, I was wondering about feta in baking, because feta, you know, is quite a firm cheese, isn't it? And that must be quite a useful quality in a way. What are your thoughts about
that? It is a useful quality. Yeah. It has quite a dry texture to it. So often I like to combine it in things that are fatty in other ways. So mm-hmm. if you take a kind of brioche dough that's already quite fatty and laminate, I mean, sort of pin it out and put pieces of feta all the way through, that works really well. I mean, particularly, you know, one of the classic things is feta and olives. So
yeah.
A feta and olive sort of roll, amazing. I do want to touch on, I know they're not that popular, but cheeses that are coloured with annatto, a little bit like...
yeah, but they're a great tradition of which we have, you know, we have them in Britain. Yeah.
Did you, I don't know if you saw just recently on Threads, there was a discussion about what colour is cheddar? Is it golden or is it white? And there seems to be, depending on where you live in the world, a different perception about what the colour of cheddar is. Mm. But for the golden lovers, yeah. I think that a cheese like Red Leicester is often quite useful because it has a kind of cheesy colour,
yes,
that doesn't actually exist naturally, particularly. Yeah. Does it? I don't know. What no, about those Norwegian cheeses that are very golden? Are they a bit coloured?
I think I've got a feeling that annatto is used quite a lot. You know, when that, and I think it's a really interesting point, Dan, that we associate a lovely sort of golden, rich yellow colour with, we often associate that colour with cheese in Europe. Mm. And that's a colour that's very desirable, isn't it? I mean, it's the colour of butter, you know, and so, yeah, I think that's a really interesting point that actually therefore using a cheese that, you know, that is coloured with annatto gives your food that sort of inviting colour.
Yes, I mean, you can back it up with, you could use smoked paprika. I on The Guardian, I think I've got some smoked paprika and Red Leicester nibbly biscuits that extends that golden colour through it. But if you have a cheese like a Stilton or a blue cheese like a Stilton or a Gorgonzola, what's the Spanish blue cheese? Is that
Cabrales or
Cabrales?
Super Cabrales. Pokey.
Yeah. You may want to add sort of vegetables, herbs, plants to it that enhance that greeny blue color. So you could add sort of adding chopped parsley in with it. I liked cooked celery. I like very much. I like chunks of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I think celery is very underused and underrated. Mm. I think it's a wonderful sort of vegetable and flavouring, isn't it? I love using the leaves, actually. Those, you know, when you can get celery, the leafy bit in the middle is a joy, isn't it?
The other thing, too, are breadsticks, cheesy breadsticks. I don't mean sort of the flaky pastry ones, but really kind of chewy bread ones that we don't seem to sell that many of in the UK, but I've seen them certainly in Paris. You see them that will be studded with olives and different cheeses.
Yes.
I love those.
Me too. Because
you can even cut them thinly and layer them with a prosciutto or different hams inside. Yeah.
Gosh. Okay.
Gorgeous.
Yep. This is all very yes. You guess what? Guess what I'm thinking about for my lunch as I head down. I'm like, yes. Now, totally craving cheese. And I mean, I suppose, you know, we should. The fact that cheese melts, it has a melting properties, is very important too. I mean, it's an interesting thing where it melts to a degree, but it sells its shape to a degree.
Particularly notice the melting with mozzarella. And again, mozzarella, sometimes the idea of it and the appearance of it is better than the flavor of it. Again, combining, say, like heightening the flavor of cheese in the dough, maybe adding some finely grated parmesan through the dough with chunks of mozzarella when you bake into it will really, you know, lift the two together.
Wonderful. Brilliant. Dan, that was a really delicious conversation. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and talk about baking and cheese. It's a real joy. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jenny. I feel excited now. I feel I want to run in the kitchen, get out all the cheeses. We do have quite a lot of cheeses in the fridge and bake with them. So I hope
Good.
I hope you do too.
Yeah, I do. And I hope that people who listen to this will want to do that too. Brilliant. Thank you, Dan. Lovely to talk to you. Take care then.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
You're listening to A Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Tesco, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, and specialist food retailers.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, we're looking at cheese in cooking, actually in one particular aspect of cooking, cheese's role in baking. I'm very happy to have with me, joining me from Tuscany, Stefano Arturi, former chef and a food blogger. He's well worth following on social media at Italian Home Cooking for lots of really interesting insights. And they say his posts make me very hungry. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Jenny.
Very nice to be talking to you. You are Italian, but you've also lived in Britain, you know, for several years as well. So I think you have a very interesting sort of joint overview. Tell me your thoughts about Italian cheese in baking in the Italian kitchen. It is an ingredient that's used a lot, isn't it?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Yeah, I think when it comes to savory baking in Italian cookery, I would say most people would be using the following three cheeses: Parmigiano mm-hmm. Reggiano, mozzarella, and ricotta. I think if you check people's baskets, you're very likely to find these very often, because this is what I myself have most of the time in my mm-hmm. fridge, and for a good reason, because actually each of them has a specific trait which makes it perfect for savory baking. Parmigiano Reggiano, as you know, has this very deep, strong umami taste. It's an umami bomb, actually. And
yes,
it brings this really deep notes in savory baking. And also it's the advantage that being so powerful, even if you are using a young Parmigiano, a little goes a long way. It's like having a very good foundation when you build a house, and then you can build on that base. And I would say this is one of the most used cheese in savory baking, in gratin, in savory pies, in pasta bakes. As an oddity, is also used, even if we're talking about savory baking, just to make people understand how crucial Parmigiano is in our food culture. As I said, I now live in northern Tuscany, Lucca, and they use a little bit of Parmigiano in a sweet pie, which is made with chard, spinach, raisins, but also, crucially, they add a little bit of Parmigiano, and this transforms the dish into something much more mysterious. So, crucial ingredient in savory, mostly, but also in sweet. And it's really, I think, right. Parmigiano, even if it's a young one, which is the one we tend to buy, well, we generally easily find in the UK or abroad, mm-hmm. Even a young Parmigiano makes a big difference. So in baking, yeah. I think it's that cheese number one. Then I would say mozzarella. As you know, Jenny, mm-hmm. because you cover the topic here on your podcast, strictly speaking, we distinguish between mozzarella and fior di latte. So fior di latte is made with cow's milk, mozzarella with buffalo. I would say now also in Italy, unless you are in the south, where fanatics about mozzarella, fior di latte, most people would use the word mozzarella. And that's the way I'm going to use it yep. now. Now, mozzarella meaning whatever yes, you find where you live. Okay. Yep. So mozzarella yep. is creamy, it's quite mild, and has these amazing melting qualities. So that's mm-hmm. why it works so wonderfully in pizza, gets stretchy. It adds creaminess, basically.
There are issues with it, aren't there, Steph?
You're exactly.
cooking with it.
Correct.
Because it's correct. Got so much moisture, hasn't it?
Yeah.
In it. So you can get a little puddle, which is a bit disappointing.
Yeah. I used to spend my summers in Salerno, which is a seaside resort not far from Naples. And my grandfather mm-hmm. was one of those fanatics about mozzarella. So yeah. we would buy mozzarella fior di latte fresh every day for eating. Any leftover would be used for baking in Parmigiana, in croquettes. I would say most old-style schools would never use fresh mozzarella or fior di latte for baking in, let's say, for a pasta bake, because, as you right. said, it's too watery. Uncovered, left to drain, and then you even pat it dry, so it doesn't leave the kind of watery. Mozzarella, for instance, well, actually, fior di latte, the one made with cow, generally is used in Parmigiana di Melanzane, which, as you know, is one of the most iconic Italian dishes, especially outside Italy. And mm-hmm. That's where, for instance, I have a different opinion, because I think it doesn't work. Mozzarella doesn't work well in dishes that need to rest. Parmigiana is much nicer after resting a few hours, but cold mozzarella gets rubbery. And
so this is quite, let's just pause there, Steph. That's quite a thing to say. So therefore, if you weren't going to use mozzarella in an aubergine parmigiana, what would you, is there a different cheese you'd use, or would you only have parmesan then, you yourself?
I would have just parmigiana. I would have parmesan, or maybe parmigiano and pecorino, and uh-huh. I could easily get out of the pickle just saying this is my version.
So. Very good. Yes, always a good, useful fallback. Excellent. That stretch, I think the stretchiness of mozzarella is a joy, isn't it? I mean, when you want stretch, that's fun, isn't it? I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's fun.
In a messy sort of way, it's fun.
I can read, also, you know, it's also a matter of money and price, because buffalo mozzarella is much milkier, but it's also much more expensive. So I think My grandfather or my family would never use of thinking buffalo mozzarella for cooking because it would have been considered a waste.
That does relate back that in Britain, you know, where Parmesan, you know, is imported and it is a cheese that has a price, it's an old cheese, but from the hills, it's matured for a long time. So we tend to use Parmesan for grating on food in small quantities, but we don't tend to think of it in Britain as a table cheese. Because I think because of the price, you know, I mean, it's partly custom and practice, but also it's seen as expensive. So you use a little bit of it because, you know, joyfully a little bit does go a long way, but you don't take a great big chunk of it, often eat it, which, I mean, is really interesting. It's how we relate with cheese, isn't it?
Well, to be fair, also in Italy, considering how expensive prices are becoming or have become, you know, people are more cautious. But I often have as my table cheese Parmesan, an aged Parmigiano. I think is still one of the, you know, great pleasures, like a good cheddar, a good Stilton. Yeah. And as I said, a little goes a long way also when it comes to eating. So you just need, you know, really a nugget. In fact, I think most, when I check recipes, especially on foreign websites, sometimes I think people overdo with Parmigiano. So the dish tends to become very cheesy, very, for me, for my palate, very unbalanced.
Yeah. For risotto. That's very interesting.
For instance, when you make a gratin, you can make a very simple gratin of, let's say, sauteed spinach and chard. You can mix it with some bechamel sauce, and then you can sprinkle the top with a little bit of Parmigiano, and this creates a lovely cheesy crust. But really, you need just a light shower. You don't need, I don't know, 3-4 ounces, you know, because then, I don't know, everything becomes tasting.
Yeah, then it dominates. Well, you're right, because it's got such a strong flavour. Yeah, yeah, interesting. Yeah. So you mentioned, so we've talked about this trio, basically, Parmigiano, mozzarella. And then the third one is ricotta, which, in fact, when I first started writing that food, was an ingredient I would have had to go to an Italian deli to find it. But now, in Britain has changed a long time, over the decades, I can now go to any local English supermarket and find it. So ricotta, very different. You're quite right. Each of the cheeses are very different from each other, aren't they? Which makes them very useful.
Yeah, so now we are at the other end of a spectrum. We start with Parmigiano, which is very, even when it's young, it's very strong and savory and this umami, you know, bomb, as I call it. And then you have ricotta, which is very mild, very creamy, and yet it's fairly substantial, as you know, because you know Italy well. Here we are lucky because we can have excellent ricotta even from, I would say, bog standard supermarkets. We can choose cows, buffalo. It's something which belongs almost to our everyday cooking. Ricotta perhaps is the most versatile cheese. And of course, we know it's not a cheese, strictly speaking, it's a byproduct of cheese making, but let's call it a cheese. Yeah, exactly, inverted comma. It goes in savory and in sweet baked dishes equally.
Yes.
When it comes to savory baking, for instance, in Italy, we make a lot, I'm talking about family cooking, everyday cooking, we make a lot of savory pies, which are called torte salate, savory pies, which is the Italian version of a French quiche. But whilst the French quiche is very rich in custard, is basically custard based, and is delicious as it is, you know, Italian savory pies are much, much simpler fares. It's a short crust, and the filling is just sauteed vegetables, most of the time ricotta, some eggs, sometimes you add bechamel sauce, but ricotta goes in savory pies very, very often, and it's an incredibly versatile dish. Even if you don't want to make the show pastry and you want to buy, it's fine. And then you add your ricotta with some egg, with whatever cooked down vegetables you have. And it gives this very substantial but much lighter texture to the final dish. And then, of course, ricotta can be baked, although this is not a real, I think, Italian. It's more like a new Californian, Japanese River Cafe, you know, baked ricotta is something which I never come across in Italy.
Right.
You know, never say never, because Italian repertoire is so huge that I'm not claiming to know it all. But I would say baked ricotta is lovely. It's a lovely dish, drizzled with olive oil, but it's more a new California, new British with Italian influences. But that's equally a nice way.
And easy. A very easy way to cook with it then, isn't it? I mean, pop it in the oven and put some oil over it. Delicious. Have it with
salmon. Here in Italy, because I can buy ricotta so easily everywhere, I I tend to have ricotta most days. Mm. In London, I buy ricotta from supermarkets, and in cooked dishes is fine. Of course, it's not as good as, but it's absolutely fine, especially when you start to adding, I don't know, generally, if you think ricotta, spinach, you would think nutmeg, black pepper, a little bit of Parmigiano. And actually, in fact, even without a short crust, you can make a delicious kind of crustless pie. Just mix your cooked down vegetables. Courgettes could be cooked down courgettes in butter. You mix ricotta, eggs, Parmigiano, and you bake it in a dish without any crust. Okay. And that's just really delicious. And
you mentioned Steph, adding a little Parmigiano. So that, in a way, because ricotta has got a very delicate flavour, if you wanted in a savoury dish, then this probably is a moment then to use a little bit of Parmesan to just give it that extra oomph that we were talking about.
Yeah. So I would say are the main dishes we use, say, every day.
Lovely. And, you know, you've already touched on the regionality of Italian cuisine. So perhaps we can go on a journey around Italy with you, Steph. I mean, so we've talked about, in fact, cheeses which are, you know, are very available in Britain. But also there are lots of Italian cheeses which are less well known in Britain that you would know about. But perhaps tell us about some of these and where they are particularly used in Italy.
Yeah, if we look at the map of Italy, each area then would have its own cheese or different types of cheese.
Yeah.
Some of these are well known also in the UK, some are lesser known. One of the cheeses that I think is quite well known in the UK, maybe not as popular as here, is Taleggio. Taleggio comes from Lombardy, so you're looking at the north part of Italy, and it comes from Val Taleggio, from the Taleggio Valley. So the cheese got the name from its place of origin.
Amazing.
And the Val Taleggio is east of Lake Como. It's about 1,000 meters above sea level. It's north of Bergamo. It's a very green area. Some people call it Italian Switzerland. And this is where they made this Taleggio, which is a DOP, which is a protected designation of origin. It's mainly produced here, also in some nearby areas, but let's say it comes from the Val Taleggio. I think people might have seen already cut, because I think in British supermarkets, it's sold in kind of small pieces, but when it comes in the whole form here in Italy, is a block, it's 20 centimeters.
It's quite distinctive because it's square.
It's square,
it's not
round. It's a big T printed. It's water and salt. It's a wash rind. And it's a beautiful melting cheese. It's pretty strong.
Nice.
It's an all-round cheese with quite a strong smell. And the flavor gets from creamy to stronger as it sits. But it's soft but sliceable.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful... It's when you make a pasta gratin, if you add few cubes, pieces of Taleggio gives again this very creamy, milky, very rich quality. And it's very kind of buttery taste. And the smell, I mean, some people say there are echoes of truffle, especially as it gets older. And it's really gorgeous in, for instance, polenta dishes. Just a simple bowl of creamy polenta with Taleggio. And then you put in the oven just to let the cheese melt even further.
Oh,
it
makes
this very rich dish.
Oh, I'm going to try that. That sounds lovely. So you make your polenta and then you layer it on top with some slices.
Yeah, so you make your polenta. You bake in a hot oven and you have this kind of cheesy polenta with a crust on top. With leftover polenta, you can make crostoni. So when you make a firm polenta and then you let it go cold, the next day you slice it, you bake it. Maybe you kind of drizzle with butter, melted butter. And then again, Taleggio on top and get this kind of melted effect. And then Taleggio is excellent on toasted bread. A piece of toast with Taleggio in the oven. Is a great...
it's a cheese I'm very fond of, I must say. A lovely cheese. Okay, good. You're making me sadly hungry, Steph. carry on.
Right. And then we have some from Lombardy. And I'm talking about Lombardy because that's the region I come from. You have two cheeses which I've never seen apart from specialized shops in London. Bitto and Casera. They come from Valtellina, which is the mountainous part of Lombardy. And these are the cheeses generally used to make pizzoccheri, which is a dish of buckwheat pasta, Savoy cabbage, potatoes, all cooked together.
Uh-huh.
And then you dread them with a huge, obscene quantity of butter, flavor with garlic. And then in the version which I prefer, you bake it. And I think also Marcel Hazan has this version. You can either eat pizzoccheri freshly made or you can gratin them. So it's amazingly, because there's so much butter in cheese, so it stays very moist and buttery inside. And on top, you have this crust.
What, you put these cheeses, the pita and the or the casera, either or would it be on the pizzoccheri?
Bitto is richer and is made about 1,500 meter above sea level. It's pretty mild, milky. Casera is the same version, but it's made with semi-skimmed milk. And you can use a combination of the two or just, you know, one or the other. And it makes these, again, great melting qualities. Again, they should be used in dishes that are supposed to be eaten hot because, you know, they get kind of rubbery when cold.
It is an interesting point about cooking with cheese. And we're talking here for this episode about baking. And actually, it's interesting things that are best served hot, you know, when the cheese has a particular texture. Because that's what's fascinating about cheese is the way it, you know, it melts, but then it solidifies and it can be sort of hard and tough and chewy and not particularly lovely, but absolutely gorgeous if it was still melted and warm.
Oh, yes. I mean, even with normal bog standard mozzarella or Italian melting cheese or British melting cheese, just, you know, a piece of toasted bread, tomato sauce, some cheese, bang in the oven, you make this very quick fake pizza. And actually, it's something which does belong to the Neapolitan repertoire. It's not something which, you know, we've come up in the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years.
Ah,
it's really toasted bread, tomato sauce, and that's a delicious, easy, and pretty economical
supper. That's a good snack, isn't it? Yeah, lovely.
That's a good snack. So then if you go towards Val d'Aosta, where the Alps are, where the Mont Blanc is, Val d'Aosta is the kingdom of Fontina.
Uh-huh.
Fontina cheese is a beautiful, again, is a DOP, is a semi-soft to hard cheese, depends how old it is. Great melting qualities, is very mild, buttery when young, then it gets stronger. And it goes, again, beautifully with polenta. Fontina goes also well with semolina. So if you don't like polenta, you can make a semolina with, you know, you can dress with butter, nutmeg, and then fontina, you can bake it. So it's the same. It's a very versatile cheese. But Fontina, in Val d'Aosta, they make a soup with Fontina, which is a typical recipe from this region.
Yeah.
And it's layers of Savoy cabbage blanched in beef broth, wholemeal bread, slices of Fontina, covered again with broth. And then sometimes they put some cinnamon, some black pepper on top. The last layer is always Fontina cheese. And then they bake it. It's an amazing winter. Well, it's more than a soup. They call it soup, but it's a meal, basically.
So your spoon would stand up in it, wouldn't it? it sounds incredibly rich. Yes, yes.
It's a
perfect mountain food, then, isn't it? You know, you've had a bath in the snow and you come in and you eat this.
Yeah. Then with Fontina, you make a wonderful recipe, which Anna Del Conte has in her pasta book, Pasta Gratin. Again, penne or any show pasta, good bechamel sauce, parmigiano, and Fontina. Basically, it's the Italian version of macaroni cheese, kind of with an Italian accent.
It sounds classy, and yes.
It's equally delicious than, you know, the British, but Fontina, again, gives this very, very nice, rich and buttery taste.
Lovely.
A totally different cheese. Now, we're talking about Fontina, which is quite strong and full-flavored. A totally different cheese comes from Liguria. Liguria is a kind of coastal region. So you look in the map on the east side of Italy, Le Cinque Terre, Portofino, Genoa.
The west,
that's the region we're talking
about. Yeah. Liguria is beautiful. So tell me about this Ligurian cheese. It sounds very intriguing.
This is called Prescinzewa. Prescinzewa I think, one of the most interesting cheeses because it shows how still regional, a lot of Italian cookery is less and less, but still.
Yeah.
Prescinzewa is a cross between ricotta and Greek yogurt.
Wow.
It's a scoopable, fresh, mildly acidic cheese, which you cannot find, or very, very difficult to find outside Liguria.
Yeah, I've never had it and never heard of it. Wow. I love the name, actually, because the name, if you're saying it's squashable, even the name sounds squashable.
Christian Sewa is, yeah. And, and it's odd because even if you ask most Italians, if they're not, if they don't come from Liguria, they wouldn't know what it is. Mm. But then it's used in one of the most popular baked Italian dishes, which is torta pasqualina, which is an Easter pie we made, well, for Easter, which is a kind of layers and layers of filo pastry-like dough. Uh-huh. And the filling is a combination of chard and spinach, eggs, a bit of parmigiano, and then this cheese.
It's cheese. Now,
this question, so which gives a kind of acidic
Yes, flavor, I can imagine. Taste. Yeah, the sourness, yeah. Right. That's
which,
interesting.
Yeah, which now, yes. Yeah, it's most, even in Italy, most people would be using ricotta. Right. But I think, you know, it makes, with this kind of acidic note, makes a difference. Torta when Pasqualina. I was researching torta pasqualina for my blog, I put some links and I tried it to make Prisciutto Sewa at home. And it's pretty doable. So if people are interested, basically it's just a matter of curdling milk with some acid, with some rennet, and leave it for kind of a couple of days. And it's an experiment worth doing because I think it's... it gives an unusual flavor to the dish.
To the torta, yes. I was going to ask you that if you're talking to us from Lucca, but you would not be able to get that cheese in Lucca then because it is so specifically Ligurian. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would be using ricotta with some Greek yogurt or just
To try and
So far we talk about kind of northern Italy. If we move down, well, I'm here in Tuscany, which is the land of pecorino. And again, aged pecorino is a very good substitute for parmigiano. And sometimes actually I prefer pecorino, especially in central southern Italian dishes.
Ah, that's interesting.
For instance, I love, in Tuscany, they make amazing pecorino, but and also in the province of Grosseto, they make pecorino romano. Pecorino romano, DOP, is made in Lazio, in Sardinia, and also in the tiny bit of Tuscany. And pecorino romano, the one you can taste here in Italy, is quite, if not very different from the one we can have in the UK. Even if the one we buy in the UK is still DOP, it's the right thing, but it generally is too salty. Here in Italy, I don't know, it's a maybe it's a different production, it's a different level of the kind of DOP scale. Mm-hmm. It's, of course, it's a salty cheese, but there is the flavor of sheep milk is there. And pecorino romano goes beautifully with all the gorgeous pasta bakes from the south, which generally are a kind of baroque combination of pasta dressed with tomato sauce, meatballs, tiny meatballs.
They're a labor of love. I mean, it's so delicious, but they take forever to make. Yeah.
Yeah. There is no bechamel sauce, just tomato sauce. But pecorino gives this, pecorino romano gives this very almost lip-smacking deep flavor, which is not just thinking of it. And then another cheese which is used in the kind of dishes from the south is provola. Provola is related to scamorza, which now we can find in the UK.
Yeah.
And provola is a stretched cow cheese, which is very mild and is the one I associate most strongly with this kind of savory baking pasta, torta salate from the south. Uh-huh. And it's, again, great melting qualities, mild flavor. So it's something which...
Is it stretchy in the way that mozzarella is? Would it have that quality?
Yeah, when it's maybe it's not fresh, as fresh as mozzarella, but when it's hot, it's the same function. And then, of course, in Sardinia, you have another, like Tuscany, great land of pecorino. So it's I would say traditionally parmigiano was more used in the north. In the south, you would have pecorino, and in most baked dishes, you would have a little bit of pecorino cheese. For instance, it's nonsense when people say don't use cheese with fish. You can make an amazing baked fish dish with anchovies or sardines, and the crust on top is grated pecorino, breadcrumb, parsley, garlic, and it goes really well. The oily... Oddly enough, it goes very well. The oily fish and then the strong cheese.
Interesting.
It's very rich, but beautiful.
Yes, it sounds good. Gosh. Steph, that has been a wonderful journey around Italy. You've made me feel quite wistful and made me want to go head off there again and do more exploring. I mean, it's always so striking, the sort of the regional richness and variety that's found there is fascinating. Yeah. Well, thank you. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, Steph. Take care.
Thank you for inviting. Bye-bye.
I'm a huge fan of Peter's Yard's sourdough crackers, and they go beautifully with cheese. All Peter's Yard crackers are made in small batches using quality natural ingredients and their sourdough starter, slowly fermented for 16 hours for award-winning flavour and crunch.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
You're listening to A Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Tesco, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon and specialist food retailers.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, we're looking at how cheese is used in baking. And I have the perfect person to talk to about this, which is food writer Catherine Phipps, author of a number of wonderful cookbooks, with the latest being Modern Pressure Cooking. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
Catherine, I am lucky enough to know you. I know that you, like me, you're a real cheese lover. I thought it'd be really interesting to hear from you because you're such a sort of creative and inventive cook. It strikes me that cheese is a really, we use it a lot in baking. That's what I was thinking. What are some of the ways that you enjoy baking with cheese?
So many. I mean, first of all, it depends what you mean by baking. Do you mean it actually in a bake or in terms of, you know?
Just the cooking method in an oven. Yeah.
Yes, in an oven.
Quite flexible, quite broad, really. So that could be breads. It could be, could be anything else. Could be, you know, cauliflower cheese. That's also baked.
Oh, yeah. Love it. So my favourite variation on cauliflower cheese is really a endive gratin.
Wow, classy.
Which is very similar because you often use a bechamel base. Mm-hmm. But there is nothing better than caramelized endive wrapped in ham, which has been spread liberally with a really good mustard, then a very, very, very cheesy sauce and lots more cheese on top. So you get a lovely brown, bubbly crust.
That sounds
in the oven.
Excellent. And in fact, that's interesting because the endive is bitter, isn't it? Which I think must contrast really nicely with the richness. What cheeses would you put in that sauce, Catherine? Have you got favourite combinations?
To be honest, yes. I mean, I do use whatever cheeses I've got around, and I always seem to have so many different heels of cheese in the fridge that I often mix and match. I love any kind of Alpine cheeses in something like this, but if I'm going British, which I do tend to quite a lot, I like a combination of a very mature cheddar, for example, something like a Lincolnshire Poacher, one of their extra matured ones, like the Two Barrels.
Oh, yes.
And then mixed with something like Oglesheald for a bit of stretch.
Nice. Good. Well, I'm liking your British cheese knowledge there. Fantastic. And so what are some other... So, in fact, you mentioned heels of cheese and you do a lot of cooking because of all your recipe books. What are some other ways that you enjoy baking with cheese then?
So I'm big on economy and not having much waste. And I do find that sometimes the heels, the rinds of cheese get really super hard. So often they're grateable in the same way as Parmesan. And I will stir them through all kinds of things. So a favourite really economical thing I do is a bread pudding. And I do sweet versions of this as well. But the favourite in our house is a cheese one. Uh-huh. And we'll put any bits of cheese in it. And it's one of those things you can use gratings of hard cheese. You can use any kind of softer cheeses throughout it. You can put slices of things like camembert on top of it.
What's the starting point for that? Is it stale bread or is
stale bread. And sometimes my bread gets super, super hard because I don't have a bread bin at the moment. And a good sourdough bread, it never goes mouldy. It goes super dry and hard.
Yeah.
So I will usually refresh that by doing the water thing. You know, when you soak it in water and you either put it in the oven to crisp up or I do it in the pressure cooker, which takes even less time, just to get it to a point where you can tear it or slice it properly without, you know, it glancing off the bread and cutting your knuckles. So bread, eggs, some kind of dairy, usually milk or maybe buttermilk or cream, and then anything you like. So I will put in any little offcuts of chorizo or bacon or some kind of smoked meat I might have, various vegetables. You can almost turn it into a kind of bread version of a bubble and squeak.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. I was thinking, I was thinking fried onion, actually, what I was thinking.
Caramelized fried onion, really lovely. Yeah. Endive again, lovely buttery leeks, anything like that. And then any kind of cheese. And sometimes this time of year, I'm very much about hard cheeses and the sort of cheeses that you might want to use for fondue. So really good Gruyere and that kind of cheese. But in the summer, I might go a little bit more Mediterranean and put tomatoes and Mediterranean herbs, and then things like, one thing I've started doing quite a bit is using halloumi in bakes.
That's interesting, because often people tend to fry it rather than bake it. Fascinating.
And it was one of those things I discovered by accident, because I was making something with paneer, a curry, and realised I didn't have any paneer, and thought, oh, well, maybe I'll try it with halloumi, because halloumi keeps its shape in the same way.
Absolutely.
And I thought, well, if it fries to a lovely soft squidginess, maybe if you bake it, will have a similar texture.
Yeah.
And it does. So it keeps its shape.
Yeah.
And it just softens, has this lovely softness to it. And the savoury element of it is just beautiful. So I'll use a Greek halloumi, or I will use the... what's it called? Is it the Bermondsey Fryer? I really love that.
That's very good. Very good in cooking, actually. It's nice in cooked dishes, I think.
But it all depends on the kind of texture you want, because you can go stretchy and gooey with hard cheeses and mozzarellas. You can go super creamy and stir through something like, even just chunks of feta, because they go beautifully soft and creamy when you bake them.
Yeah. I was given some St. Jude cheese when I went to visit Julie Cheney, and she very sweetly gave me some to take home. So I had so many I could actually cook. Well, normally I just eat them because they're so utterly delicious. It's a little, very small cheese. So it's very easy to eat. And Julie said, oh, look, just bake it. She likes baking it with tomatoes. And I just did that. And it was so delicious because it's such a lovely cheese. It had so much flavour. I mean, I think, you know, that's interesting, Catherine, isn't it, that actually when you start with a cheese that has a lot of flavour, then obviously your cooked dish, no surprise, ends up with a lot of flavour, because it's there, you know, right from the start, isn't it?
Absolutely. And if you've got something that's creamy with a little bit of acidity going through it, and then you pair it with tomatoes, and tomatoes sweeten beautifully when you bake them often.
Yes.
What one of the things I like doing is using a very, very fresh, creamy cheese, like a goat's curd or something like that, baking it with tomatoes and then a really good sizzle of lemon juice, because there's something about the quality of lemon juice brings out the sweetness of the tomatoes. And then if you put that on some buttered toast or something, really good.
One thing that struck me was, you know, so that whole family of quiches and flans and pies, you know, that cheese is such a great, because cheese is so, I think it's because cheese is such a diverse food. I'm using this one word, but they're, you know, there are hundreds of cheeses out there, aren't there, with different qualities. So therefore, there are lots of cheeses that are lovely in, I mean, I'm very fond of making a quiche with goat's cheese. That's probably, again, like you, would probably be like a sort of spring, summer thing, because I like that acidity, you know, that freshness and the acidity of it. I mean, I bet you've got lots of lovely ways you enjoy of making quiches. And flan.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those movable feasts. It's never the same twice.
Yeah.
So in summer, you've got a really lovely goat's cheese that you can slice into rounds and dot on top. And you might have other vegetables or tomatoes running through that. So the eggy base is quite eggy and pure. Or I might have grated some parmesan through it. And actually, that's something else we should talk about. Baked custards, cheese-flavoured baked custards. there's always something, isn't there?
Yeah.
And then there's the ones where the cheese can go right the way through it. So I'm a really big fan of, it's a very old Rick Stein recipe that's originally a French recipe, and it's Swiss chard and cheese in a quiche or a tart.
Nice.
And I love that combination because you get the earthiness of the chard with a hint of bitterness as well, which helps cut through quite rich cheese going on in the custard as well.
Yeah, let's go there because that sounds very delightful.
Okay, so, well, a baked custard is really almost like a pastryless quiche, but depending on how you do it, you can have a very, very firm one, or the more liquid you add to the eggs, the smoother and silkier it gets. So the famous one, of course, is Rowley Lee's Parmesan custard.
Yeah.
But again, you can do that with so many different hard cheeses.
Perhaps how would you make it then, Catherine? Someone who's not had Rowley's and would like to try it.
You're making a custard and you're melting. So you've got your eggs and your milk. And the key is to, on a very, very, very low heat, melt in the cheese. So as you can imagine, Parmesan takes quite a long time to melt.
Yeah.
And you have to, for it to really work properly,
right.
You have
to. So you grated Parmesan, so it's because it's small and...
Yes, just very finely grated. Yeah. So it's like almost dust.
Yeah.
But you can do that with cheeses that melt slightly better. So, for instance, a slightly less aged cheddar would work really, really well. Yeah. But just stirring it on a very, very gentle heat until it melts through. And then you can bake it in the oven. You can... do it in a steamer as well. I do it in a pressure cooker for about 5 minutes.
Catherine, I just must intercept, is known for her pressure cooker cookbooks. And I'm always amazed at what you produce and the range of what, because I see it on your, I follow you on Instagram and see all your amazing meals. So very interesting. That sounds very nice. So I like the way, I think what's interesting, Catherine, is you're talking a lot about texture when you talk about cooking with cheese, because again, that is something that cheese offers, doesn't it? Is a range of textures. But depending on what you want. So, yeah, and I like, you know, your point about with the quiche, that the, if it was a hard cheese and if it's got slices of it, it will stay intact, or the way you were talking about the halloumi, it would keep its shape. But, of course, cheese can also be grated and melted into your filling, can't it? It can be much more an intrinsic, you know, like in a classic, yeah, if you made a sort of cheese pie.
And if it's a fresh and creamy one as well, you know, that would kind of seamlessly... Yeah. Absorb into any other dairy, just in the way, same way a cream cheese would if you're making a cheesecake.
I was thinking about some of those, thinking again of baked dishes. What about something like a tartiflette, all those rich, you know, and I was thinking about cheese and potato. That is a really good combination, isn't it?
Yeah, cheese, potato, a bit of wine. I often like different greens in mine as well, which isn't traditional in a tartiflette.
But
I think it works very well. I've recently developed a recipe which was potatoes, mushrooms, any kind of greens. And I ended up using Brussels sprouts because they were here and they were in season.
Yeah.
And sliced camembert over the top. And so the camembert just melts onto it.
Yeah.
And then if you want to brown it, you can put it under the grill. But often getting that kind of fondue-esque type stretch and melt on a cheese, you don't always need that brown crust as well.
Yeah, that's very true.
I think
that sounds lovely. What, so were the potatoes, they were blanched then and sliced or cooked? Were they boiled?
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah. I did this in the pressure cooker, so it all goes together.
Right.
Because you can use a pressure cooker to make gratins and bakes, and you kind of treat it like a bain-marie, really. So it's kind of like a steam oven.
Gosh, I'm always so intrigued by the way you, you know, because I don't have a pressure cooker. I'm not aware really of the different ways of using it. Yeah, I might need you to show me how to use one, Catherine, then I'll invest in one. But I'm always, it's so interesting always hearing what you, the ways you use it. Yeah, so that's, and like adding the greens is a really nice touch because, you know, I'm very fond of chard. You mentioned chard earlier. I think chard and cheese is a lovely combination because the stalks have, you know, keep that texture really, which is rather lovely. I mean, I used to live in Tuscany, and of course, spinach and ricotta is a very classic Italian pairing.
And that classic baking as well.
Yep, yeah, which is also good. I mean, you need to really squeeze out your spinach, don't you? That is the message.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, so much moisture. So I just remember being, you know, when I was learning to cook in my sort of early student days, and then just being really horrified the way that spinach shrank down and how little I had left. You know, it was sort of shocking. I was like, really?
Kind of why I like using chard in its place, because it keeps its integrity a little better.
It does. Yeah, no. And actually, I mean, often the spinach you buy in shops is baby spinach, which absolutely really does shrink down. What you want is proper big leaf spinach, which has got stalks and does keep its shape a little bit better. Catherine, you've got a very interesting, I think, a very cosmopolitan approach to your cooking, where you draw inspiration from lots of different cuisines. What are there dishes that you are fond of that you involve cheese in baking? It could be sweet or savoury from other cultures that, you know, that you're fond of.
Yes. One of my mother-in-law's favourite things to do, which has evolved into a real comfort food, family comfort food dish, involves spinach again, actually, or fenugreek leaves, or sarg, or any of, you know, the mustard greens, any of those greens we associate with South Asian food, cooked down, again with potatoes, often with potatoes, hard-boiled eggs. So you would make a kind of, I guess, almost like a sargaloo. The potatoes are optional. And it would be very creamy. I mean, she used to put a ton of cream in hers, and we don't put quite as much cream in it when we do it. So it's very gently spiced.
Right, I was going to ask about the spicing. Right, so it is spicy.
Yeah, just very, very gentle. Yeah. You know, if you want heat, because it's a family dish.
Yeah.
I mean, my children are much better with heat now, but the heat isn't really the point of it. It's just a kind of very mellow, creamy, gentle. Think of a mild korma.
Yeah.
But more savoury, because it's cheese rather than coconut or almonds or whatever. So yes, so you've got this lovely cream spinach with lots of lovely warm spices running through it, bit of sweetness, hard-boiled eggs, and then lots and lots of cheese on top.
Oh, really? Well, grated.
Which you can just melt onto it, or and any cheese. I think she always used to just use a very kind of bog-standard supermarket cheddar.
Sliced, grated,
lots and lots of grated.
Oh, yeah. So really, like a great,
and then melted.
Oh, and then baked in the oven. Yeah. Oh, that sounds very nice. That's really interesting. I love that. I'm going to try something like that. That sounds. I don't think I've had that combination of sort of spiced spinach with cheese, but it sounds like it would work really deliciously. Have you got favourite British cheeses that you enjoy cooking with, Catherine, in your kitchen? Are there things that you would make? We've talked about Parmesan, which obviously is. I think because it's so flavourful, it is a fantastic cheese to have. And cheddar. Are there other, I know that you enjoy exploring British cheeses. Have you come across some and then ended up cooking with them and thought, God, that was really good?
Loads of cheeses. the thing is, I'm one of, I buy cheese from Courtyard Dairy. I go to Neil's Yard every other week. We've got the Chiswick Cheese Market once a month. Plus, you know, we've got Lincolnshire Poacher turning up at my farmer's market every month as well. I've constantly got cheese. But I have favourites. I always go back to Oakleshield. Always.
Nice. Right.
Just because I love the way it behaves when you bake it, because it melts beautifully. It has a really nice stretch to it.
Yes.
I mentioned Bermondsey Fryer earlier.
Yes, so this is Bill.
I love all of their cheeses.
He's a great cheese maker. Yeah, he's been on this podcast.
Really superb.
Yeah.
I don't bake as much with blue cheeses. I do love Beanley Blue, and I did recreate and this is a Marmite dish. This is a dish that I think has the ability to make people's stomach flip, because quite a few people don't like baked blue cheese. And also, a lot of people think the idea of warm cooked avocado is really disgusting.
Ooh, okay. I'm feeling like...
But
yes, okay. I'm feeling wary. So tell me in.
Well, yeah. I used to work around the corner from a very old style Italian restaurant called Luigi's. Maybe Catherine Street or around that area, you know, the Waterloo Bridge end of the Strand.
Yeah, right.
And they used to do a baked avocado and gorgonzola starter. And that's all it was. It was avocado and gorgonzola.
It doesn't have to be too rich, Catherine, because you've got, you know, avocado's rich and then the cheese is rich.
Yeah. But in a quite small quantity with a decent bread, I used to really like it. It ended up being one of my comfort food dishes.
Yeah.
I had to be persuaded to try it. It yes. was one we, it was a kind of Friday lunchtime kind of place for us.
Yeah.
And I think somebody persuaded me to try theirs once because they'd been having it for years. Right. And I was sold after that.
And so that's something you make at home yourself then?
Very, very occasionally. But a Beanley Blue is a nice one for that.
Yes, lovely cheese too. And what about, we should finish up by talking about sweet baking with cheese, Catherine, because since we have you here, I can pick your brains. What are your, are there certain sweet dishes that you enjoy? I mean, cheesecake, I suppose, is the classic. Yeah, I think if I was thinking of baked cheese and dessert, then I would think of cheesecakes. But perhaps you've got other thoughts as well.
Well, I do like baked ricotta as well.
Mm.
Just with a nice drizzle of honey. But I think it lends itself to so many interesting flavours. I really like using little compotes with it. I did one recently that was apricot, saffron, bit of white wine, bit of honey, bit of rose water.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Mm.
And that works so nicely with ricotta.
With baked ricotta then, yeah. Oh, with...
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds very nice. Because such a delicate flavour and a texture, you know, it's very amenable, isn't it? It's a sort of very... It's a very versatile cheese in that way, I think, because you can take it in lots of different directions. That sounds beautiful. All right, Catherine. Well, that was a lovely conversation. I'm always enjoy hearing how you cook with cheese, Catherine. It's very inspiring for me. So, yeah, so thanks for coming on A Slice of Cheese again.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care then. Thanks, Catherine.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Thank you so much for listening to A Slice of Cheese. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed it, it would be lovely if you could rate us on wherever you've found this podcast. It will make such a difference to us. So I hope you'll enjoy us again. Thank you very much.